Good afternoon, everyone. Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison.
Here.
Vice Chair Jacque.
Here.
Ranking Member Woodson.
Yes.
Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Amnesty.
Here.
Antone. Bartleman. Black. Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Mello. Salzman.
Here.
Skidmore. Steele.
Here.
Trabolsi.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Emma. Guests, we're glad you're here today, and welcome to the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or put on silent. We want to welcome all our guests here today, and as always, we want to thank our sergeant staff for everything they do to keep us and our guests safe. I want to take a moment of personal privilege before we get started today. I've got three guests here, good friends of mine, longtime prosecutors from the Fourth Judicial Circuit, Mark Khalil, Dan Skinner, Al Mizrahi, together probably about 75 or 80 years of prosecutorial experience keeping the people of the Fourth Circuit safe. So we're glad you guys are here. Welcome, good friends. Folks, we're going to begin today by first reviewing the budget proposal spreadsheet, and then I'm going to turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Jacque, and I'll present the loan conforming bill on today's agenda. The spreadsheet you have before you, or is are having before you, I think it's being passed out right now, lists all the funding proposals that I'm recommending on behalf of our subcommittee. There's a brief explanation of each item in the far right column. The full appropriations bill will be published by the end of the week, and we'll go through the usual amendment process pursuant to our rules. I want to take some time to highlight some of the items in the budget proposal and encourage you to contact me or Brian Clark, our staff director, offline or, we get some time over the week if you have any questions. The overall healthcare budget proposal this year totals $46 billion. There's a decrease of 3.1% in total spending and a 3.6% increase in general revenue funds from the 23-24 fiscal year, and this includes a decrease of 276.7 state FTE over the prior year for this, as we discussed during our earlier meetings. The proposed healthcare budget fully funds Florida's $33.2 billion Medicaid program to serve an anticipated 4.8 million Florida Medicaid beneficiaries. Medicaid spending is decreased by 3.9% from our current fiscal year. The proposed healthcare budget fully funds Florida's $786.9 million KidCare program to serve approximately 242,382 children. KidCare spending is increased by 39.7% year over year. The budget provides $185.2 million for Medicaid provider rate increases, including our nursing homes, pediatric physicians, maternal fetal medicine, and additional PACE slots. The budget provides $29.4 million to continue the Comprehensive Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Managed Care Pilot Program for up to 600 Floridians. The budget provides technology upgrades for the Department of Children and Families Child Welfare System in the amount of $25 million. And the Florida Access System in the amount of $36.6 million. It provides the following funding to continue to address the opioid epidemic in our state, $3.6 million of federal opioid response grants, and $96.9 million for opioid prevention, treatment, and recovery by utilizing opioid settlement funds. The proposed budget provides $10 million to provide transitional and long-term housing needs for domestic violence survivors, and $8.1 million in federal grant funding to combat violence against women and enhance services for crime victims. The budget provides $6 million to support additional beds for additional safe homes, serving survivors of human trafficking, as well as 9 FTE to enhance the department's anti-human trafficking efforts. It provides $12.8 million to support and enhance the DCF's customer call center to support inquiries related to Medicaid, SNAP, and TAMP benefits. It provides $12 million to remove seniors from wait lists and improve in-home services. And that $12 million includes $4 million to serve 418 seniors in the Alzheimer's Disease Initiatives Program, $6 million to serve 898 seniors in the Community Care for the Elderly Program, and $2 million to serve 540 seniors in the Home Care for the Elderly Program. Proposed budget provides $3.5 million for the Senior Home Rehabilitation Program, which will address health and safety, code violations, and home energy efficiency issues in the homes of our senior citizens. It provides an increase of $40 million to expand the Florida Cancer Innovation Fund to promote emerging cancer research and $7 million for the Rural Hospital Capital Improvement Grant Program. Proposed budget provides $1 million to expand access to dental care for Florida's veterans through a network of nonprofit organizations, and additional funding in the amount of $12.8 million for the Department of Veterans Affairs for various equipment and maintenance, technology upgrades, and workforce training and employment support of Florida's veterans. Members, that concludes a summary of my health care budget proposal. I encourage you to review the budget. A couple things I wanted to highlight. We've had some discussions throughout on a presentation about our mental health hospitals throughout the state, both privately run and publicly run. We had a long discussion on those issues and presentations in our committee. You will not see the issues related to that in this year's proposed budget. And I just want to say that issue is going to be continue to be worked through. As we mentioned, it's very important to me, and I think specifically, you heard me mention, give mention to some of the facilities in the Gainesville area, has been particularly important. But I also want to thank my colleague, Representative Brandon, and the folks at Baker County for working myself and Vice Chair Jacques, as we understand the issues specific to Nefesh and that community, and doing everything we can to make sure we have sufficient beds to support our needs in the mental health area, both now and going forward. There will be more to follow in this committee on that specific issue as we go forward, but I want to thank Representative Brandon for his friendship and leadership and advocacy on that particular issue. I'm now going to hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Jacques as I present the conforming bill on Medicaid supplemental payment programs. Vice Chair, meeting is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We will now hear PCB HCA 24-01 by Chair Garrison. Medicaid supplemental payment programs. Mr. Chair, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Members, PCB HCA 2401, Medicaid supplemental payment programs, is a conforming bill for the Medicaid supplemental payment programs. It provides the following. It specifies that certain hospital classes must participate in the hospital-directed payment program, also known as DPP, to be eligible to participate in the low-income pool, or called LIP, or indirect graduate medical education, called IME, those programs. Provisions of the bill do not apply to public hospitals, cancer hospitals, federally qualified health centers, medical school physician practices, rural health clinics, or behavioral health providers. I think there were some questions about that. I hope that's very clear for the members. It does provide an effective date of July 1, 2024. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the explanation. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, public testimony. Seeing no public testimony, is there debate? Members, we are in debate. Seeing no debate, Chair, you're recognized to close.
Wave close, thank you.
Having waived close, Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jogg?
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Salzman? Skidmore? Steele?
Yes.
Trabolsi?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, I will show PCB HCA 24-01 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I will now hand the gavel back.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Members, we have three member bills on today's agenda in addition to our budget and our PCB. The first member bill is going to be by our ranking member. Member Woodson, you are recognized to proceed with HB 63, Protection from Surgical Smoke.
Thank you, Chair Garrison, for allowing me to present this bill this afternoon in the committee. Thank you again, Chair, Vice Chair Jack, Democratic Ranking Member Woodson. I'm saying it because even though I'm presenting my bill, I want to say thank you to myself as well.
well deserved.
For taking on this bill, yes. Members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to present House Bill 63, actually entitled Protection from Surgical Smoke. House Bill 63 requires all hospitals and surgical centers to adopt and implement policies that require the use of surgical smoke evacuation system during surgical procedures. Several hospitals, from the Cleveland Clinic to Okeechobee Community Hospitals and many in between, are already doing this. Surgical smoke is the result of human tissue contact with lasers and electrosurgical pencils commonly used during surgery. It is estimated that over 500,000 patients and healthcare workers are exposed to surgical smoke each year. The average daily impact of surgical smoke to the patients and the surgical team is the equivalent of inhaling the smoke from approximately 30 unfiltered cigarettes a day. 15 other states have already passed protection from surgical smoke legislation, including Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Arizona, and others. Members, I want you to know as well that in the state of Florida, by 2035, we are expected to have a shortage of about 65,000 nurses. If we don't pass this piece of legislation, who is going to take care of us and our families? Not only we are putting the life of our nurses in danger, but we're also putting the life of doctors and any other staff who is in the surgery room. So I'm asking you to really consider this bill. Mr. Chair, that's the bill.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Members, do we have any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? All right. Oh, yes, Representative Kennedy.
Thank you. You know, I'm trying to get myself wrapped around this a little bit and understand what we're asking hospitals to do. And I was able, thank you very much, to have a conversation and get some of my questions answered. Can you help me understand? I'm looking at the bill analysis, and I'm seeing that the costs are somewhere between $10,000 and looks like as much as $120,000, according to the bill analysis. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Rep. Kennedy. Basically, the equipment that is to be used costs about $10,000, which is nothing when you're comparing it to the life of a nurse or a doctor. Additionally, the pencil that is used inside the equipment costs about just $15. If the hospitals buy the equipment, they will give them the equipment free after a certain number of years, providing that they buy the pencils from the same company.
You follow up?
Yes, thanks, Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm familiar with systems like this. I've used systems like this in a different context. Do all of the systems utilize the pencil that you're referring to?
You recognize, Vice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the pencil comes in the equipment that is being used to capture the gas that permeates into the room. Yes.
One more.
Follow up.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a particular vendor that utilizes that type of system? Because I have experience with systems that are different from that. I'm just wondering if this bill requires a particular type of system.
May I?
You recognize Ranking.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are not recommending system at all. That would not be fair to any hospital to recommend to use a certain company. No, this bill is not doing that at all.
I'm going to go to Representative Abbott. You recognize.
Thank you.
Your question.
Thank you, Chair. Do we have any data on how many healthcare providers have been affected by the smoke in Florida?
You recognize, Ranking Member?
I do not have the data with me, but I could have someone come in and speak up and attest to that, especially some of the nurses who have been dealing with this issue.
All right. No follow-up. Any other questions from members of the committee? Any other questions from members of the committee? Seeing no questions, we're going to move to public testimony. We have Ron LaFace representing the Florida Association of Nurse Anesthesiology, waiving in support. Janice Adams, or Janice Adams of the Florida Nurses Association, here wishing to speak. Ms. Adams, you are recognized. And I know we have a number of people from the FNA here, so by all means, all are welcome. But if you're going to say the same thing, let's kind of keep it together. But thank you. You're welcome and recognized.
Thank you very much. And I did bring a few of my friends, as you can see. So good morning, Chair Garrison, or good afternoon, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jock, and Ranking Member Woodson. Thank you so much. And to members of the committee, my name is Janice Adams, and I am the immediate past president of Florida Nurses Association. I represent approximately 440,000 registered nurses in the state, and I'm here to support HB 67. Chair Garrison, thank you so much for putting this on the agenda today. We've been on a roll. We've been to a lot of committees this session and last session as well, talking about this bill. Our operating room nurses have provided us with the occupational hazards that they are existing and daily exposure to surgical smoke in the operating room for years. We know this is an occupational hazard because OSHA has deemed it as such, yet they have not provided established guidelines. They have referred to their general duty clause in which to support that organizations are responsible for making the work environment safe for their employees. Due to OSHA not acting, we are asking our legislators to do that for us in the state. We have many nurses that are here today, and we have a couple that are going to speak to you that are operating room nurses that can give you the history and answer the questions that you may have about the exposures and about the hazards that they are up against. Harmful smoke has been shown to contain live viruses, toxic chemicals, and cancer cells. These dangerous cells are floating in the air and the smoke that they are breathing on a daily basis. We know that masks are not adequate. You can wear 3 masks, and still, if you're not wearing them appropriately, and the size of the particles that are being inhaled makes a difference in the mask. So we already know that these viruses pass through those masks. We have support from the Florida Association of Nurse Anesthetists, the Florida Hospital Association, and many hospitals in the state are already on board. At a time when healthcare workers are being lost from the bedside in droves, many nurses are leaving the profession because of these hazards and that lack of protection from the hazards. They're experiencing burnout. We all know what COVID looked like. We know what we went through. And Florida can take an important step to protect the health and safety of our OR staff and to shore up that workforce for residents in the future. We do know that we're going to be about 59,000 nurses shy by 2035. We want to keep every single one that we've got right at the bedside, right in the operating room. So thank you for your time today. We do support and hope you will support HB 63. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is, handwriting's not the best, Megan Maroney. The FNA, you are recognized.
Good afternoon, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jacques, Ranking Member Woodson, and members of the committee. My name is Megan Maroney, and I'm the director of the West Central Region of the Florida Nurses Association, representing constituents from DeSoto, Hardy, Hernando, Highlands, Hillsborough, Manatee, Pasco, Pinellas, Polk, and Sarasota counties. Thank you, Representative Woodson, for sponsoring HB 63, Protection from Surgical Smoke. It is estimated that over 500,000 patients and healthcare workers are exposed to surgical smoke each year. Surgical smoke produced from vaporized burning human flesh and tissue is a workplace safety hazard and health risk for both nurses and the surgical team, doubling their chances of respiratory issues than the general population and equivalent to inhaling 27 to 30 unfiltered cigarettes daily. Surgical smoke is also a reproductive health risk for female surgeons. The American College of Surgeons advises evacuating surgical smoke to prevent exposure to COVID when surgery is performed on COVID-positive patients. The National Fire Protection Association's 2024 Healthcare Facilities Code requires surgical smoke capture in new or remodeled hospitals. The state of Florida needs this legislation to extend this to all pre-existing facilities. A baby's first breath born by a C-section should not be surgical smoke. There may be at least one of us in this room who will need surgery or who knows a family member, friend, or colleague who will have surgery or who works in the OR and thus exposed to this hazardous environment. HB 63 protects not only nurses, but the entire surgical team, but most importantly, our patients first and foremost. On behalf of your constituents, I humbly ask for your support for HB 63 in hopes of making Florida the 16th state to go smoke-free. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Our next speaker is Sandra Falk, also with FNA, coming to us from Fort Myers, all the way from Southwest Florida. Good to see you, ma'am, and you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jacques, and Ranking Member Woodson, and members of the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee, I stand before you today in strong support of House Bill 63. My name is Sandra Falk, and I have been a certified perioperative surgical nurse for over 26 years. Surgical smoke, as mentioned previously, is created when human tissue is coagulated, cut, or ablated using an energy device such as electrocautery or laser. In other words, it is the smoke from burning flesh or burning tissue. At least 500,000 healthcare providers are exposed to surgical smoke each year in our state. Hazardous to everyone in the operating room, including the patient, it is a workplace safety issue. The gases and vapors can lead to asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease known as COPD. It may transmit viruses such as HPV, HIV, and COVID-19, which is once again a major concern. Research published in 2010 demonstrated that medical staff working in surgery reported twice the incidence of respiratory problems as compared to the general population. Similar research published in March 2022 resulted in the same outcomes. Surgical smoke can be controlled through cost-effective smoke evacuators that will rid the air of the hazards in the smoke. Contaminated surgical smoke evacuation devices are disposed of as hazardous waste in proper disposal containers. In the Select Committee for Health Innovation, I was asked a question about the masks worn in the operating room and weren't they enough to protect us. I explained there is no mask 100% guaranteed to protect the OR teams, or for that matter, any other nurse at bedside. During COVID, we wore an N95 and a surgical mask. Heaven help you if you needed to sneeze. You had to run outside your room, lower your mask, sneeze into the crux of your elbow, put your mask back on, and get back into your room. For the surgeons, for the surge techs, it was sneeze in your mask, no matter how long that case was going to last. Unfortunately, that isn't possible, again, for the surgeon or the tech. There was also a question regarding costs. Most facilities already have the equipment needed. It is a matter of replacing the pencils. The current pencils, which provide no help with the smoke, are about $11. The smoke-free pencils are $16. Every manufacturer is different, and of course, there are 20 manufacturers making these pencils. So it is up to the organizations, the hospitals, to get in touch and price and trial and see what works for them. With 20 manufacturers, again, we don't know all of them, but I do know that the pencils my former hospital went with were $5 more. Isn't my life worth $5 more? Aren't your lives worth $5 more? Aren't the lives of our C-section babies worth $5 more so their first breaths can be clean air? I think so. We must address these concerns now. Lives depend on it, and this legislation will make the difference. I ask you to make Florida the 16th state to enact smoke evacuation legislation, joining states such as Arizona, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Missouri. Including Florida, there are six states with pending legislation. I thank you for your support for House Bill 63. I thank you, Representative Woodson, for not being a nurse and not being in the OR. You know an awful lot about smoke-free. And for sponsoring this bill and being prepared to answer questions, which usually can only be answered by OR personnel. I thank you all for your service to our communities, and I would be glad to answer any questions you may have about my testimony.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate your testimony today. Glad you're here. Next up, we're not going to do questions of witnesses. Next up is Jack Corey, and Jeffrey Becker is going to be on deck, and David Micah, you're in the hole. So.
Thank you, Mr. Corey. My name is Jack Corey. I'm representing the Florida Nurses Association. And responding to a couple of the questions, in your staff summary, it says that the equipment is $8,000 to $10,000 annually. It is not annually. It's a one-time purchase. And again, if they purchase the instrument, they could end up getting the equipment for free. The $120,000 quote, if you look at it, it's tagged to number 8 on the bottom, and that talks about just one study if you're going to build a whole room. Not many people doing that unless they're remodeling equipment. There was also a question about how many people are impacted on this, Mr. Chairman. Over 500,000 patients and hospital workers are affected by this each year. We thank you for the time, and we encourage you to support the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Corey. Mr. Becker, Jeff Becker, on behalf of Medtronic, waves in support. And David Micah from FHA. Mr. Micah, you are recognized. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just need to correct the record real quick. I know that it was noted earlier that we were in support of the bill. And Rep. Woodson, I know we've worked over the last couple of years on this one as well. And while we're not currently in support of the bill, I would say we're not also in opposition. We think there's opportunities to work here together and some opportunity to fix that. One of the things that I want to connect on is implementation timeline. Look, we're talking across the state. This is not a per hospital expense. This is a per OR expense. And so we need to look at that, what timeline that takes, and how we can implement those. Our workforce continues to be our number one priority. We've talked many a times here. But when we look at our rural communities, we want to be gentle in how we approach these kind of issues and ways that we can implement those. So we're committed to continuing to work with you, Rep. Woodson, on how we can get there, and with the Nurse Association and the nurses as well. And thank you, Chair, for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Mike. I appreciate your testimony. Members, we are in debate. Is there a debate on this bill? Representative Bartleman is first. Representative Steele, do you want to debate for that? Okay. Well, Bartleman and Steele.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to thank Representative Woodson for bringing forward this bill. As a mother of a future nurse, she's starting nursing school this summer. I definitely see the need for this to protect them, to protect everyone who's saving our lives. So I appreciate that, and I hope that you can work things out with the Hospital Association in terms of the implementation timeline so that we can make this happen. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Steele, you recognize in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for bringing this great bill, Rep. I think it's much needed for our nurses, the people that are having surgeries. I do have a concern, though, about the time frame. And I also don't want to make sure that we open up the hospitals and surgical centers to class action lawsuits if they don't meet those time frames. So I think there is room to be, you know, made on that. And I know the hospitals obviously care about their nurses. So I think everybody can work together and get that resolved. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Steele. Representative Abbott, do you want to debate?
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, sir.
Time frame is a consideration for sure. And it's not just the hospitals. I've had a couple of dermatologists reach out. They're really struggling with the bill. And they found out about the bill before I did, because they had one of these smoke things reach out saying it was already going to be mandated. So I want to watch and see how we roll that out. Again, like everyone else, the utmost importance is keeping everybody in that room safe. And then also, you know, recognizing that what the cost factor can be, not just for rural hospitals, for some of our smaller dermatologists and stuff like that in our rural areas. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abbott. Any other debate members? Any other debate? Into the debate, going once, going twice. All right, we are sold. Ranking Member Woodson, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you very much, Chair Garrison, for allowing this bill to be heard. I really appreciate you. Not only just one bill, you put two bills for me on the calendar this afternoon, and I'm grateful and thankful.
It's Ranking Member Day here.
Thank you so much.
Healthcare Appropriations.
I really appreciate you. Don't tell them I say that. You my favorite chair. Don't tell the other chair. I know I'm on TV, though, but I'm just kidding. Anyway, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. I would like to thank the nurses. Look at the room. Look how many of them who are here in support of this bill, because this is their lives. This is the lives of the patients that they are serving, the life of the doctors. And we know we have a shortage of nurses, of doctors, of healthcare workers in the state of Florida. So I don't see any amount that is too big for us to put their life on the line. I don't care if it would be $1 million. We need to do what we need to do in order to make sure that our nurses are healthy, our doctors are healthy, and all our healthcare workers, just like anybody else, are healthy. I would like to thank Jack Corey for working with me on this bill. He has put in so much time to get me all the information that I needed. Jack, I thank you so much for the work that you do on behalf of our nurses in the state of Florida. I would like to thank Krista Kalamas and Chris Oswell. We have the best staff in this house. They really, really help us to get our bills to the finish line. And to all the members of the committee, I'm also looking for your support. I really appreciate you hearing me this afternoon. As we know, we heard from everyone here, and all the supporters and advocates who came here this afternoon as well, I thank you. Healthcare, we saw what we went through during COVID, and we know how important, how critical our nurses are. So we have to protect them. We want to make sure that they are protected, the patients that they're serving are protected, and everyone in the state of Florida is protected. For example, a baby's first breath should not be surgical smoke. It should not be. We want to have a healthy population. Our colleagues in the Senate have already passed this bill in the committees that they have been. So let's try to do the right things. Actually, not just try. Let's do the right thing by our nurses, by our doctors, by our healthcare workers, so we could have a healthy state. So colleagues, my colleagues, I look forward to your support on this important, this critical piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, ranking member. Tell us how you really feel next time. With that in mind, with the ranking member having closed on her bill, Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jacques?
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Salzman? Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Emma. Show the bill reported favorably. Our next bill up, and first, thank you to all our nurses who are here in the audience today who took time to be here, probably took some time off work, burning some annual leave. We appreciate your presence, and on behalf of every single member of this Florida House, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter, we appreciate you. We value what you do, and just know that we're grateful. So thank you. All right, our next bill up is HB 7021 by Representative Maney, Mental Health and Substance Abuse. Come on up, Representative. Representative Maney, you are recognized. Present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you'll indulge me for just a moment, I would like to make sure I'm properly attired for your hearing today.
Putting the Clay Day pin on in this committee is always a wise move, Your Honor.
I just thought I might be more professionally attired.
I love it.
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Ranking Member, members of this committee, thank you for letting me present this bill today, or thank the chairman for letting me present it. This is an important bill to me, and I think it's an important bill to the people of the state of Florida. I sent each of you a text last night that was kind of longish, because the bill's kind of longish. The staff analysis is kind of longish. So I thought I'd try to hit the highlights in that text and then talk to you a little bit about what I think the bill is intended to do and what it will do if it's enacted by this House and this legislature and signed by the governor. The Baker Act is a 52-year-old bill law that provides for involuntary and voluntary treatment of people suffering from mental illness. The Marchman Act is a 30-year-old bill providing that people who suffer from substance use disorder have voluntary or involuntary treatment. What this bill is really a modernization of those bills to meet today's needs, to reflect today's society and today's problems. We do have two amendments that I'll address when the chair asks me to, but the current Baker Act and Marchman Act are really awkward. They're awkward to work. It's an expensive system. It doesn't provide good outcomes, and it's very expensive. I'm going to, as you would expect every speaker up here, I'm going to ask for your favorable support on this bill when I get through. But the challenge before us as a state is great. I mean, this really is a big problem. One quick point of reference is we have one member of this House who has a constituent who has a 17-year-old daughter who this school year has been subject to Baker Act 16 times. Baker Act is simply an evaluation mechanism. People then may be referred to treatment or they may be released. And what I'm trying to do is to address the processes. So, for instance, in the Marchman Act, one thing I want to do is combine what is a two-petition process into one petition so that people don't get called back and forth into court. One thing I want to do is allow law enforcement to have the same discretion that doctors and judges have, and that is to say that they may Baker Act somebody. The current law requires law enforcement to take people into custody. It's been my experience as a judge that frequently law enforcement can calm people down. That's true in domestic violence, where people might think the other person is a real jerk, but once the officer explains that somebody's going to get cuffed and stuffed unless you settle down. But nowadays, they have to take them into custody. Nowadays, if a child is acting up at school, they have to take them into custody. The current law says shall. Now, can just imagine the trauma, particularly for an elementary school child who gets handcuffed and walked out of school and put in the back of a police car. So this bill would give the officer the option to de-escalate the situation. Let's get the parents involved. Let's calm things down, go back to class, and move on with your life. Of course, if you're a real tough guy, a high school tough guy may feel like he's being a hero by getting handcuffed and walked out of high school. But the problem is, like this 17-year-old girl, a Baker Act evaluation is not treatment. They can't physically come up with a treatment plan in detail, personalized to that child, in a 72-hour period. So those are the kinds of things. I won't go through everything I put in my text, but I'm explaining why I think it's important for us to look at this bill, look at this law, these laws, and look at ways we can improve them. The bill is not perfect. It's already being amended. I've had lots of meetings with stakeholders over the last 3 years, but this is a major start on creating an effective solution to a big problem that's costing us a lot of money and not getting as much in the way of results. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Maney. We have questions on the bill, and we also have amendments. So let's just start with questions on the bill. Do we have questions on the bill before we get to the amendments? Representative Antone, you're recognized for questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Maney, for bringing this bill forward. Years ago, I had a young lady in my foster home who never wanted to do chores, and so whenever it was her time to do chores, she said she was going to kill herself, and so she had to be Baker Acted. How would this bill address a situation like that?
You're recognized. Representative?
The current Baker Act criteria, which at this point is not changing, is a person has to be in imminent danger to themselves or others of serious bodily injury or death. So if she's saying she's going to kill herself, she would probably be Baker Acted, just like the current system. The point is, one of the things we're trying to do, even in this bill, is when somebody is released, there will be a plan and a handoff or a direction of where to go to get follow-on treatment. That's not always the way it happens now. If any of you go to the hospital with a broken arm or have a baby, before you're discharged, the social worker or the doctor comes by and says, this is what you need to do. Well, we need to do that, and we need to do it better with people who are having mental problems, emotional problems. And so the bill does address that. One of the amendments we're going to address, we'll talk about a significant amount of money that the state may put on this process to make it better. But again, at the 72-hour level, you're not going to get a lot of detail, but you will get people calm down and start figuring out where they need to go.
Thank you, Rep. Antone. Any other questions from members to Representative Maney? I see no other. Do you have a question? Yes, Representative Campbell. You recognize
Thank you,
question.
Mr. Chair. Just a very quick question. Within the bill language, does it require the officers to put handcuffs on them, or is that more of an option?
You recognize Representative Maney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill does not require handcuffs. It does not prohibit handcuffs. Where that comes from is law enforcement agencies typically have a standard operating procedure for officer safety, for insurance purposes, for protection of inmates who may try to break out of the car. And those procedures typically say everybody who's taken into custody shall be handcuffed and placed in the back of a patrol car. There are a lot of places in Florida now, but not enough, that have mobile response teams. They're supposed to be able to get to a school or a place within 30 minutes. That's not possible due to traffic in some place like Orlando, and it's not possible in a place like Okaloosa County because the county's so big. So we don't have enough of that resource. But places like Tallahassee has plainclothes cars and a multidisciplinary team that responds. But the answer to your question is no, it's not required or prohibited.
Thank you. Any other questions, members? Seeing no other questions, we're going to move on to the First Amendment, which is barcode 566723. It's amendment number one. Representative Maney, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Mr. Chairman, let me ask a quick question. Is that the discharge amendment and the other one's the
I believe it is. Amendment? Yes, it is, sir. It's a discharge amendment. Okay.
This amendment really deals with what happens when a patient is discharged from the receiving facility, from the 72-hour examination time. So it's limited from the initial bill language so that it doesn't require what, in fact, can't be done. The providers, receiving facility people said, you know, we can't give a complete plan in 72 hours. We may not know all the problems with this patient. And so the language has been adjusted so that it's a doable task as far as giving people guidance. Now, I should mention that the law does require court order, treatment plan, all that goes in the court file. So whoever later picks up the file, not the court file, the medical file, flashback.
Old habits die hard.
It gets placed in the patient's record. So whoever in the healthcare system that is talking to that patient, when they pull up the electronic record or the paper file, they can see what's been done.
All right. Representative Maney, having explained his amendment, do we have any public test? Any questions from the members on the amendment? Amendment number one. Seeing no questions, do we have any public testimony? We do have public testimony. Shane Messer from the Florida Council of Behavioral Health Care. waving in support. Thank you, Shane. Yes, and also I see behavioral health folks waving in support. Thank you both. Members, do we have any debate on Representative Manny's amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Manny, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave close, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Manny. All in favor of Amendment 1, signify by saying yay. Yay. Any opposed? Show the amendment adopted. We're now on to Amendment 2, which is barcode 840403. Representative Manny, you're recognized to explain Amendment 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right. There was a band when I was young that used to start off their shows by saying, here's the one you've been waiting for all night. We're talking about money now. This amendment attaches a fiscal component to what we all know is otherwise a policy bill, but it's going to need money to make it work. The amendment calls for $50 million. That's the recommendation by the Department of Children and Families. It's what they say is going to take to make the bill work. And I'll just real briefly tell you how that $50 million is distributed. $500,000 for new reporting requirements. What that really means, currently, University of South Florida has a contract with the state to collect Baker Act information. They don't collect. They don't aggregate. They don't analyze Marchman Act. So that's a new requirement that will be generated so we can better track and treat people with mental health and substance abuse issues. $25 million because we're increasing involuntary commitments. Now, that may be a number which leadership negotiates on, but that is what DCF says they're going to need for involuntary treatment. You know, we have a lot of these people who cycle through the system. 20% of the people use 44% of the mental health and substance use services. So this treatment is designed to address the cycling and try to cut that down and make the cost come down. $10.5 million for Marchman Act services and $14 million related to the new requirements for discharge planning and coordination so that when people get out, they know where they need to go, their family knows where they need to take them, so they don't get off their meds and come back into the system. That is the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Maney. Members, do we have questions on Amendment Number 2? Any questions on Amendment Number 2? Representative Steele, you're recognized for a question on Amendment Number 2.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for doing what you're doing with this, the issue that we have in the state of Florida and globally, actually. What was the amount of money for the software, the data?
You recognize, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It wasn't just for software. It was for the collection. I mean, the treatment facilities are going to be required to submit paper. They've got to have a better system. A lot of that currently is still done by paper, and then when it gets to USF, they have to input it. So that's why this cost looks kind of high, but it's a significant upgrade because we're asking for significant, more useful data.
Rick, you follow?
Yeah.
I don't have a breakdown between hardware and software and personnel.
I'm good.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions on Amendment 2? Seeing no questions, we're going to move to public testimony. We have no public testimony on Amendment Number 2. Members, any debate on Amendment Number 2? Any debate? Seeing no debate. Representative Manny, you're recognized to close on Amendment Number 2.
I respectfully ask everybody's support. This is a major problem. It will be modified. I know, for instance, in order to align with the Senate, I'm probably going to have two amendments taking things out to which they object. But I want to get a good bill passed, and I hope you all will take part in that with me.
We'll get to that in just a second. Amendment Number 2 on the fiscal. Any other questions? Okay. Having closed, All in favor of amendment number two, as filed by Representative Meany, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Hearing no opposition. Okay, now members, we are on the bill as amended. And do we have any public testimony on the bill as amended? Yes, we sure do. We have David Micah with the Florida Hospital Association waving in support. Thank you, Mr. Micah. We have Amir Warren with the Florida Association of Counties waving in support. Thank you very much. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, proponent of the bill. Barney, you here? We assume waving in support. All right, we have Nancy Lawther, Dr. Nancy Lawther with Florida PTA, waving in support. Jonathan Weber with Florida SPLC Action Fund, waving in support. And that is all the public testimony we have. Members, we are on debate on Representative Maney's bill. I have Representative Trabolsi, then we're going to Bartleman. Representative Trabolsi, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Maney, for bringing this forward. I'm so happy that it's here. Patience is a virtue, and I know you've had your fair share of patience to be had over the past 4 years. The first time I met you, I asked what you wanted to work on, and you said, the Bakerette. And that's what you're doing, and I know some good things take a long time sometimes, but I appreciate you not giving up. This is such an important bill. What you are doing can literally change people's lives, and mental health is such a big topic to tackle, and I think you're really tackling it in a meaningful way, so thank you.
All right, Representative Bartleman, you're recognized for debate. We're going to follow that by the ranking member, and then Representative Antone after that.
I just want to thank you about this bill. We've been talking about it since committee week one because this is a passion of yours at breakfast. I cannot tell you enough how important that warm handoff is for those families. As someone who taught students with severe emotional disabilities, we had numerous Baker acts, and the problem is they say goodbye after 72 hours, and the family's like, what? What's even more disturbing, and it's not in your bill, but it's a whole bigger issue, is that the schools aren't made aware unless the parents consent to it as to what happened and what the treatment is because of medical privacy laws. So they're left out of the equation after that discharge. But giving them a warm handoff and places to go will make all the difference and will stop the revolving door. And also the discretion is really important. I hate it when I see a kid calmly, especially a little 8-year-old, calmly walk out with handcuffs and you're like, he's being Baker acted. Or the same thing when you see a child with autism who's Baker acted because you have the provision for students with developmental disabilities, which is not the best course of action in most of those cases. So I really think it's incredibly comprehensive. It will protect the individuals we wanted to protect, and we will ensure that people get the follow-up care they need. So I really appreciate this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bartleman. Ranking member, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Maney, thank you very much for sending me a text last night at 12:30 responding to my questions and my answers.
He is on Central Time, so don't give him too much credit.
Yeah, it was after midnight, actually, and I really appreciate the fact that you are always open and willing to hear our concerns, but more so the type of time, energy, and passion that you have put in this bill, because as a judge, as you know the process, and I have worked in the system, as I mentioned to you, as a former public administrator, where I saw a system that is so cumbersome, so convoluted, and by the system being so cumbersome, so many people end up suffering, and you know it, and you have really, with your bill, you have really simplified the process in a way that everyone would benefit. So I really appreciate your hard work, and also thank you for clarifying the $50 million that's in there, because I got a lot of calls about it, asking what is this money going to be doing. So you clarify that for me as well. But I'm very happy that you have gotten this bill to where it is now, and I really appreciate your work, and I look forward to support you on this very good and important bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Rep. Antone, you're recognized.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank you for this great bill. Thank you for all the hard work you put into it. And when you close, can you just clarify if the data collection piece is 500,000 or 5 million.
All right, any other debate on this bill? I'm going to debate real quickly, members, and It's not so much on the content of the bill, although I think the bill is fantastic and a great first step for modernizing our Baker Act system. I'm going to debate in favor of and in honor of my good friend, Representative Maney. No member of this legislature has given more to his country and to his community than Representative Maney. I'm not going to look at him because I'm going to get emotional, but he is a true American hero, and he's doing this for the people that need it. So with that, I ask for your very favorable support on this great bill. Representative, you are recognized.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I started my close earlier, so I won't go over it again, other than to thank each of you for listening and reading and hopefully joining me on this journey. With that, Mr. Chairman, I close.
Thank you, Representative Maney. Having closed on this bill, Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jock?
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Salzman? Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trabolsi?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Emma. Members show that bill favorably reported. Thank you, Representative Maney. And you can keep that pin on if you like all day. People of Clay County appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee.
All right, our last bill today, members, is HB 725, co-sponsored by Representative Woodson and my friend Representative Snyder. And it is titled the Veterans Long-Term Care Facilities Admissions. Representative Woodson, I believe you're going to be presenting the bill on behalf of Representative Snyder today. You are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you again, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jack, and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to present House Bill 725, entitled Veterans Long-Term Care Facilities Admissions. And this bill is being introduced, as the chair said, by Rep. Snyder and myself. And Rep. Snyder, who is not with us, but he has contributed as much as I did in this important piece of legislation for our veterans. House Bill 725 revises eligibility regarding admissions to the Florida State Veterans Nursing Home and Long-Term Care Programs. This bill revises Chapter 296 of the Florida Statute to allow admissions of spouses or surviving spouses into the veterans nursing homes. The domiciliary and adult day health care programs in the state of Florida. Veterans still take priority over spouses due to federally set priority of admission. Revision of this bill, actually in Chapter 296, allows for veterans and their spouses to remain together if they need long-term care. Direct effects result in increased admissions due to a broader applicant pool. While the VA does not cover the costs of care for spouses, FDVA would be reimbursed for its services to private pay, Medicare, and or Medicare programs. Right now, if a veteran, after being married for his wife, let's just say for 50 years, and they need long-term care, if the spouse is not a veteran, they are not going to be together. And we cannot do that. We know how our veterans have sacrificed so much for us to enjoy the freedom that we are enjoying. We need to make sure in the golden years, they can be together and live happy. So this is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Member, do we have any questions of the Ranking Member on the content of the bill? Members, any questions? Seeing no questions, we have some public testimony. We have FDVA here waving in support. So thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. Glad you're here. And Parker Thomas of the Florida Healthcare Association also waving in support. Thank you. We appreciate your support. Members, is there any debate on this bill? Any debate on the bill, members? Seeing no debate, Representative Woodson, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to present this bill on behalf of Rep. Snyder and myself. We really appreciate you putting it on the calendar. As I mentioned earlier, our veterans have done so much for us. They have sacrificed their life, and it's only fair that we make sure that they are taken care of, especially in their golden years. I would like to thank Bob, as well as Bob from FDVA, who have worked with us very hard on this bill, and thank you for getting it to where it is now, and we hope to push it to the next committee, and hopefully it will get to the floor as well. So, Chair Garrison, thank you again. I appreciate you. All we're asking in this bill is to do right by our veterans and their families. I would not want to be separated from my husband after being married to him for so many years. When I need long-term care, I want to be able to be with him. So this is what we're asking for our veterans. So members, I'm asking for your support, as I know all of you would support our veterans. Thank you for the service. And by the way, I would like to thank everyone who is a veteran and the audience as well, all on the dais.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Ranking Member having closed on her bill. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jacques?
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson?
Yes.
Representative Zappin?
Yes.
Amnesty? Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Mello? Salzman? Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yeah.
Trabolsi?
Yes.
12 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Emma. That's going to conclude our substantive agenda. Member, just one last follow-up. You know, you've received the chair's recommendation for our House budget. I'd encourage you, if you have questions, let me know. I'm happy to discuss them with you or get with Brian at your convenience. For those in the outside world who come to you, if they like it, it's your idea. If they hate it, it's mine. So just keep that in mind, all right? Thank you, everybody. And with that, Rep. Bartleman Ruse, we rise. We are adjourned.